Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies, the Talking Pictures podcast. Guess who's here this week? I'm Neil Rosen, but Lisa Rossman is back.
Hello, hello.
Look at that. Everybody's asking for Lisa Rossman, including me, and here she is. And we've got quite a show today. And joining me, as usual, Bill Bregoli.
Yes, sir.
And Bill McCuddy.
Present.
There you go. And what a show today. Not only are we going to talk about all these movies that are opening up, big Academy Award possible nominee movies.
And hear from some of the stars.
Call Me By Your Name. The Darkest Hour. It's just called Darkest Hour, The Shape of Water, and Wonder Wheel. And we're going to hear from, who are we going to hear from today?
Jim Belushi, Woody Allen. I've got the director, Joe Wright, the director of Darkest Hour, and we'll see. More.
A lot of people. Unbelievable. Well, anyway.
Surprises.
All right. So let's start talking about Call Me By Your Name, okay? Because we were off last week. It opened 2 weeks ago. And, you know, since we used to do the TV show, everybody will know what I'm talking about that's sitting in this room, and some of you listeners as well. Lisa, why don't you take the lead on this one?
Okay, I am spacing on how to pronounce the director's name. It's Luca something.
Luca something.
Okay, do you guys know who I'm talking about? Anyway, it's an Italian import to some degree. This guy is actually lovers with Tilda Swinton and often makes films with her. He made A Bigger Splash, and he made I Am Love. This film is set in the 80s in Italy, and I'm guessing that it's loosely based on his own youth because he was born in 1971, so he would have been a teenager during that time. And it's about a young man. His name is, yeah, this isn't going to help me, Luca Guadagnino.
There's a lot. How do you pronounce Timothy's last name, the young boy?
Yeah, don't start with Shall me. You're just
well,
rude.
I don't. Okay, sorry. He just won a Gotham the other night. In fact, this thing.
He's amazing in this
movie.
So here's
did very
the premise.
Well.
The premise is he is a 17-year-old boy who is with his family in Italy for the summer. He's extremely. He's like trilingual. The whole family is. His dad's a professor, and his dad's graduate assistant shows up to live with them for 6 weeks, played by Armie Hammer, and the two have a love affair, which is really that's the premise of the film. But really, it's just it's an incredibly beautiful film that could have been made in the 1960s, except for the fact that it's set in the 80s.
And the pedophilia aspect of it.
Well, 17. I mean, sure, there's the...
That's what's going to... Bill McCuddy made a great point.
I think it will sour its
gonna
chances.
That's going to sour its Oscar chances, is that creepy pedophile...
And also the parents, not to give too much away, are kind of complicit and kind of like,
don't
care.
But
I think it's a beautiful movie. I just want to say...
Yeah, I don't really feel that... I hear you. I mean, just to clarify what we're discussing... Because Armie Hammer's character is in his early 30s or late 20s.
I think he's mid-20s or late.
Right. In the film, he might be... In real life, he's 31 or 32. And this guy is clearly in his mid-teens. Like, there's going to be all kinds of uncomfortable accusations leveled at it. The love itself in the film feels very reciprocal. There's nothing predatory about the sexual relationship they have.
The kid is the one who initiates.
He's the aggressor, absolutely.
He's the one who initiates the relationship.
He puts his little paw in his crotch.
I think it's an all right film, but
okay if you're not Matt Lauer.
I think it went on. We'll get to that later. I think it went on too long. I got kind of bored by it. I think it's beautifully shot.
Extremely good film.
The shots in that villa in Italy are just beautiful. But I just think it's just kind of like, and I was watching this with my wife. We both thought it just kind of went on. It was kind of draggy. It just went on and on and on. Meanwhile, there's this actor, the one who plays the kid's father, Michael Stolberg. And
he's in everything.
He's like, I never heard of this guy, and he's in everything.
You know what he's
in?
Heard of
water,
him.
He's in
he
this.
Was in the Jew movie that the Coen...
Simple Man.
Remember the Coen Brothers made a movie that was sort of exploring being... being basically a Midwestern Jew. I can say that.
He was in Lincoln.
He's like in everything these days.
Yeah. And he is in another film that we're talking about today, The Shape of Water.
And he's in
Shape of Water, excuse me.
He's in The Post, which we'll talk about in a
few
weeks.
Yeah.
He's in everything.
And he's fantastic. He's a very versatile actor. He can play nebbishy, he can play sweet, he can play
menacing.
He was
at the same party that Armie Hammer was the other night, and I spoke to both of them, and I think the speech...
Did they tell you that you're handsome?
I think, yes, it got uncomfortable at one point.
What did you think?
He told me that the speech that Michael gives at the end of the movie, basically accepting the fact that his son is gay, is the speech that every gay man now comes up to them and says, I wish I'd had that father.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary speech.
Well, let's just give the whole ending of the movie away, but...
This is not a movie about plot.
What's that?
It's very dreamlike and kind of languorous was the word.
I like that. I love that. Yeah. That's great.
So would you recommend the movie?
Sure, if you're in the mood, but you got to be in the mood for it.
It's a real old school sit like in a movie house movie.
It is set in Europe, but it is like I could see that as a subtitled movie. It seems like a foreign.
It's like a Bertolucci.
I feel like it's a testament to how important it is to really feel melancholy. The whole movie is really about not getting shut down and being open to new experiences in your feelings,
including
which you forget.
Peaches.
I don't know.
Yes, and Peaches.
Yeah,
Peaches' sexual feelings.
I don't know. There were some scenes in this that were...
Neil was not grown up.
You're a little uncomfortable just talking about it.
He's literally getting red, you guys.
There's a Peach scene that's... I think it's a contrived scene. And there's... Listen, the end of the
movie... You sporting a little wood over there?
I've never had sex with a piece of fruit.
You're getting excited over there and you don't know how to deal with it?
American Pie? I mean,
no, it's... No, because it was a good movie.
And then there's this... At the end of the movie, and I'm not giving anything away, the kid is sitting there and they're playing some... lyric from a song over and over and over again. They were just some kind of...
No, the last 2 minutes are mesmerizing, I think.
Some so good.
I think there's a lot of pretentious parts of this. Like
pretentious is what people say when they're not comfortable or they're asked to stretch.
I wasn't uncomfortable. I thought this went on. It was a little
this
bored.
Is what people say when they're being asked to stretch.
I don't think it's a horror...
Did Mrs. Rosen keep turning to you and saying, you're straight? You're okay. You're straight.
She was like, Neil, you're not a homosexual. Don't worry. This isn't in your past.
I think that it just went
And then
on
she
a
winked.
I think it went on a little bit too long. I mean, there's a lot of scenes. First of all, by the way, Armie Hammer, I will tell you, my wife, this guy is a great looking guy. I mean, talk about Blake Shelton being... Wait,
wow, so if you were gay...
The sexiest man alive. This Armie Hammer, and my wife would agree. I think...
Do you know what's funny? Whenever he's in a movie, I'm always looking for his evil twin. Because remember, he played...
The Winklevoss brothers.
Yeah.
That was the last good thing.
Social Network.
We should really talk about how his career has been righted overnight.
That's
with this
really
movie.
Good point.
I mean, you know, he was in The Lone Ranger. He was in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He's been
in a lot
of...
Oh, and he was in that terrible movie about J. Edgar Hoover where he plays his boyfriend.
Right.
And I mean, the truth is, he had obviously the worst agent in America.
But he's really, really good in this.
How good looking?
He's not my cup of tea, I gotta tell you.
My wife was swooning over this guy.
He and I talked about how much he sounds like John Hamm. And
he does sound like John Hamm.
He said that he gets that a lot and that he wishes that Hamm didn't work as much doing voiceovers.
He also sounds like the guy who plays the president on Scandal. Like, that's because I wasn't wearing my glasses for the first 5 minutes, that's who I thought.
That's funny. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not. I think.
Okay, we got it. You're lukewarm on the film.
The awards. All the movies we're going to talk about today have possible. They're all the movies that are released at this time of the year. The studios release them for possible award considerations. And since we all vote for we're on the BFCA, the Broadcast Film Critics Association, and we get screeners to vote for the Critics' Choice Awards. We're getting all these movies. So they're all award consideration movies. And Bill McCuddy, as I said a few minutes ago, made this point to me like last week about the fact that it's an older guy and a younger kid, that's going to, and Lisa Green.
Well, that'll be the smear campaign. That'll be some of the things that'll be talked about by the people who don't want
it. It is being
nominated.
Embraced. It's not like the queer community has a problem with this film, though. I mean, he's a bisexual filmmaker. You know what? I don't know that for sure. I just get that vibe that he is, actually.
I'm going to say, we're not going to discuss the movie this week because it hasn't opened, but I'm going to just make one really early prediction. I said this last night. We were at an event last night for Fox Searchlight, and I said the movie that's going to win Best Picture of the Year is The Post. And the reason is because it's
very
about
relevant,
freedom of the press.
Yeah.
And Meryl Streep it was in the 70s, is a strong
female. That would definitely
character.
Be Hollywood.
And
like,
that's Hollywood. It's not about what I think deserves to win, but it's that movie of the moment.
It would be Hollywood slapping itself on the back.
So
for
not
sure.
Dunkirk.
Okay, but
oh, God, no. Dunkirk isn't going to get anything.
I hope you're right.
It'll get a lot of nominations.
Speaking of Dunkirk, there is another movie.
Oh, this is a segue. He's so good at these. Go ahead.
That deals with sort of with the Dunkirk historical event from another angle.
In fact, it helps if you've seen Dunkirk, I've been told.
At the Hampton Film Festival.
Oh my God, you guys are interrupting each other. Finish your thought, dude.
The director said that Darkest Hour is a good companion piece.
You're man interrupting each other.
Anyway, I'd like Bill
Burgoyne
to take the
lead
on Darkest Hour. But
tell us about it.
It takes place shortly after the Wilderness Years. which is when Winston Churchill was out of government at a certain point, and he could barely make a living doing speaking engagements. Mm. And then all of a sudden there's a huge row in Parliament. The Germans have been talking to the British government, and all that's going on. They need a new prime minister, and all of a sudden it's Winston Churchill, whom no one wants, particularly the king.
Then why do they pick Winston? It's never made clear in the movie. We'll talk about the movie, but why, if he is doing crappy speaking engagements and nobody wants him, why is he suddenly selected to become the prime minister of England in this time when England
no
might
one else
fall
wanted
to the Nazis?
That. There are a lot of other guys up for the job, and they just didn't want it. They saw this coming.
It was going to be thankless.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And so anyway, Gary Oldman plays Winston Churchill under a lot of makeup. And
a lot of makeup.
He's the kind of guy that reminded me of my very first boss, where you just don't want to deal with this guy, particularly secretaries. And,
your first boss wore a lot of makeup?
No, but he was corrupt. Actually, my first boss was German.
It'd be funny, assuming that he was a man.
He asked me if I smoked during my job interview. This was in the 70s. And when I said no, he said, good, I wouldn't have hired you if you smoked.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a tricky dude. And Winston Churchill's a lot like that. There is a scene where his secretary comes in on her first day in the job, and she's soon leaving the office in tears. And his wife, played by
Kristen Scott Thomas,
tells her, "Don't worry, he's like that with everybody." And anyway,
and
all this is happening.
Real close friends, the secretary and Winston Churchill.
And he has to convince his peers in the British government to wage war against the Germans and not to placate them. And really, the movie's about the power of the spoken word.
And
which is interesting because Dunkirk itself.
Some of these people.
I did. I spoke to Joe Wright, who directed the movie, who said pretty much what I just did, that it's about the power of the spoken word and how Churchill was able to harness that.
He believed in the power of language to change and shape the world, which is kind of what the film is about. His ability to tap into the will of the people and voice it.
So what I liked about this movie, and I liked this movie very much, was I hated Dunkirk. There was hardly any dialogue in it. And, you know, it was just if you didn't know the story of Dunkirk, I mean, you're just watching this thing and it was just three separate. Here's the airstrike story in Dunkirk, and here's the, which we've talked about in the past, and here's the rescue boat story, and here's the. And this was I wasn't looking at the battle, but at least it was being explained to me that England might fall.
You like when things are explained to you, don't you?
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, I was watching Churchill, make these decisions about, we'll sacrifice these people of Calais, the troops in Calais. And they said, well, you're going to lose 1,000 people. Yeah, but we're gonna save 300,000 people. To divert the Nazis from, giving them more time on Dunkirk. So at least I was getting some historical background on what was actually happening there. I thought Gary Oldman's performance was great. I spoke to the director. He was doing a Q&A after the movie at the Hampton Film Festival, and he said, believe it or not, that they even had more prosthetics in early tests on Gary Oldman to look even more like Winston Churchill, but it was so much prosthetics that Gary Oldman couldn't even move any of the muscles in his face, so they toned it down. There's also a great scene in there that the director said was completely fictional, where Churchill gets on
the tube,
which is the subway in England, and starts talking to the common people because he couldn't decide what to do, and they all give him advice. They're all unbelievably shocked that he's riding the train. And he goes, no, that's completely a fiction that was made up. What did you think of the movie, Lisa?
This is the kind of film that I don't personally resonate with, so I found myself scanning it for its award possibilities, and I don't think it's its year. I mean, I agree. I think Oldman, I don't like Gary Oldman very much because he's such a conservative when he speaks off camera, but I always admire his performances, and I did here as well. But I also kept on thinking about how this film reminded me of the film made about Margaret Thatcher, where they, they do that thing where they keep on sort of pushing between his dotage and then the moments where he's in his I mean, it's funny that
super when, Churchill or like,
yeah, exactly. Like yeah. mega Churchill. And I don't love that technique. Like, I mean, I agree. I think the most interesting parts of this film are the parliament scenes, like the parts that actually break things down.
But when he met with the king, did you like those?
I thought they were, I mean, but the thing is that to me, another, I mean, I'm going to be really blunt, like another film right now about a bunch of white people, like white men, like patting themselves on their back for a war that happened a long time ago is not the kind of movie that I think that, well, the Academy is going to want to applaud. And I was sort of bored.
Bill, what? You, Bill,
I was
I
bored.
Disagree.
This is your, Bill Bregoli, you should all know, if, and we've done the podcast from his apartment.
New he's Churchill.
Like a, he's a World War II buff. He's got like
actually,
World
I
II
was in
vintage.
One of the places where
you
the
were movie. In World War II.
That's what
no, I was
about.
In the, but I was in the actual cabinet war rooms where the those scenes take place.
Where
with
is
the
it
maps
like way underground?
Way underground.
Have
yeah.
you been to his office in London?
I've
you
been,
can go and
no,
visit that.
How do you get down there? Is it like an elevator? You got to walk down hundreds of flights of stairs or something like that?
I barely remember. I it was mostly down flights of stairs.
Okay. So what do you think of the film? Because I thought it was great.
Yeah, I really liked it. I know it's about a movie about a war that takes place long ago, but it's about something that we really
well,
need
now.
Well,
I mean, it is standing up to nationalism. I understand.
To care.
Yeah. No, it's about not people taking chances, all of that. I just, it's a very, I mean, it's funny. You found Call Me By Your Name slow, but I found this film
oh, really?
Interminable.
I want to ask this as the only person who hasn't seen it. First, two things. One, I've read a couple of places that this subway scene kind of takes you out of the movie, that it's almost,
no,
it's,
I love
it's like
scene.
A,
it was phony.
It's like a dream.
It was so
it,
phony.
Somebody said it comes
it
off
was
like
so
a dream.
He goes
MIA.
Oh, he's a man of the people.
He goes
right.
AWOL. They can't find them in Parliament. Yeah.
So will that hurt it in terms of no. because they took some artistic license? And
no.
secondly, has anyone with that much makeup ever won an Oscar before?
Absolutely, that's what they do. Like, you make yourself look ugly or old.
De Niro went then you,
but not to that, not that.
It's Nicole Kidman prosthetic nose,
yeah, that's
always.
What, that's it. That's the only one I could think of.
Well, I know I digress here.
That's not true. Charlize Theron for Monster.
She
transformed herself a fair amount.
By the way, I was watching Raging Bull the other day. It came on TV. Talk about bad prosthetic noses.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, it's just so, that nose is just so distracting. But, I thought it was a great movie. I thought, first of all, Ullman, great.
Yeah.
I thought the story was terrific. I think it's inspirational because it's like England was the only country that didn't make a deal with the Nazis or fall to the Nazis. And it shows you how the strength of the English people and how Churchill kind of like engineered that thing. It was insightful into historically, if you like history, about what Churchill did. I think it was shot really well. I mean, it has all the earmarks of an Oscar-winning film. Do I think it's going to win Best Picture? I do not. But, you know, the Oscars is a political
Gold
race.
Derby says he's number one. He's
oh,
the leader.
Win. Although I think that Jake Gyllenhaal in Stronger gives the more amazing performance.
No legs.
Did you see? Yes. Did you
Sorry.
See that, Lisa?
Nope.
Okay. Did you see that, Bill? Well, that's an, he plays a double amputee legs
oh
from the
God.
Boston Marathon, and he's it's just an incredible performance. But as Bill just said, the movie.
Well, I'm quoting our friend Roger Friedman, who said that last night at the Christmas
yes,
party.
Yes.
The film has no legs.
Right.
To take the bad joke out of that, no one has seen it. I mean, we've got the screeners.
I've seen
we
it.
Haven't. You've seen it.
I've seen. I think it's an amazing, amazing performance. And but the
who explained it to you?
What? Very linear story. Guy watches.
Me understand.
The
good.
At the Boston Marathon. The bomb goes off, and he's and he loses both of his
Neil Rosen, the little
it.
Boy who understood
Caveman
courage.
Critic like.
And it's good. He's Jake Gyllenhaal. It's a remarkable performance, and I don't know why.
He's a good actor. He is. I mean, he does one thing very well, which is intensity. You know, it's like Christian Bale does manic intensity, and he does depressive intensity.
I'm gonna take my house apart. And then he
I'm
does.
I'm going to take my house apart. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, and since we have the Talking Pictures crew here, I'm going to tell you a very funny story since Lisa's
oh
here.
Oh, boy. Smoke them if you
so
got
So we
them.
Get a lot of stuff to vote in the Critics' Choices Awards from studios and from sometimes you get these letters from actors or thank you for
oh,
voting
yeah.
for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get this letter, which we've all gotten, but it seems like it was personally written to you. And this one came from Jake Gyllenhaal. Thanking
Wait, you got that too?
Yes, thanking you thanking me for championing independent film, and it's so hard to get an independent film made these days, and I appreciate you appreciating my performance in Stronger, and blah, 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 and it's signed Jake Gyllenhaal, and we all got this thing. So I write back and to Jake Gyllenhaal, and I said, I'm really glad that you like independent film, and people that support independent film. Well, we had a television show called Talking Pictures, and if you'd really like to support independent film, perhaps you'd like to contribute to, I'm trying to get the show funded so we could get on PBS, and I never heard back from Jake Gyllenhaal. So,
did you write to Ed McMahon when he sent you the Publishers Clearinghouse?
That's a legit question.
Did you write to no reply
but even though
at
I didn't
Jake
get
Gyllenhaal.
A response, Jake, I did really like your performance, and I think it was the strongest performance of any performance I've seen this year in any film.
I'm sure he's listening.
So, Bill Bregoli,
Performance
how
and
many,
you can
how
call
many
me by my name is better.
Oh, I'd give it like a good 3.5 to 4.
Yeah, I'd go like 3.5, 4 apples on this. And Lisa would
can't believe we're still talking about it. Right, what else is on the docket?
All right, we're moving on. We're moving on to an interesting.
She's back and she's bored.
She's back, ladies and gentlemen.
I feel like the hashtag MeToo moment has fully licensed me to admit how boring I find these movies that only have women in support of, like, Twittering wife or secretary roles.
Back to the, right,
I am super bored of those films.
This is like an old Lisa Rossman conversation. It's like the Dirty Dozen. I didn't like it. There were no women in it.
No. First of all, why is that an issue? You guys whine about chick flicks anytime you're forced to watch it.
I never do.
Oh, my God. Just the phrase.
Are we talking
chick
I Tonya you this week or next week?
Next week. That's next week. Save it, buddy.
Save it for...
Some strong chicks in that.
Save it.
Disturbed, strong women.
I mean, it would be like seeing Steel Magnolias and saying there wasn't enough strong male parts.
Well, but the truth is that it's just that after a while, the sheer volume of films that I had to sit through that was just men pulling guns out, or every once in a while a guy would be let me finish my sentence. Yeah. Or you guys would be like, I don't know, there's already been a female female comedy this summer. Why are we watching another one? And I'd be like, I just watched 9 movies based on
how
the
do you
film
like girls
Taken.
Trip, by the way, just to digress.
You guys, we were on. I was on when we talked about it, thought it was quite.
You
got
to listen to the show, Neil.
I know. I
you should totally
I
listen
should
to yourself.
Listen. Well, it was a while ago. That's true.
Wait, what's next?
Okay, so next is a really interesting. Yeah, this is a weird ass movie, boy. I tell you, it's called The Shape of Water.
Oh yeah.
And it's by directed and written. Co-written or was it co-written by did Guillermo write it or co-write it? Anyway,
it's an adaptation based on a novel.
Right, and
which is a very interesting book.
And the sounds of New York in the background. Yes, as we sit here. So written and directed by Guillermo del Toro, and what a cast! I mean, you've got. Michael Shannon, you've got Sally Hawkins in an incredible performance who plays a mute janitorial worker, I guess.
Janitor, I think. Octavia Spencer plays her best friend.
Octavia Spencer. And here's what this is about.
Oh, and Richard Jenkins, don't forget.
Richard Jenkins and Michael Shannon is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And
Snidely Whiplash bad. I mean, he's just...
And the dude we were just talking about.
And Michael Stuhlbarg, who we just talked about earlier, as I said, he's in this too. And you want to take the lead or I'll do the lead on it? I mean, you tell me,
Do
Bill.
It, Mick Eddy.
I'll tell you what it is.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So you'll do the lead on Wonder
I think it was the book, by the way, was called The Three Wishes of... Swim Man
I spoke to Guillermo del Toro also at this Fox Searchlight thing, and I said, well, I'm digressing. Let me first tell you what
you're
this
digressing
about. Okay, so it's the early 1960s at the height of the Cold War, and everything looks very 60s like. It looks like something out of a set from like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. or something like that. And they're in some laboratories in some unknown place.
Baltimore.
And okay, thank you, Bill.
No, that is an unknown place. I've been there.
Well, Bill actually, I think, lived in Baltimore. Didn't you live in Baltimore?
Yes.
Okay. And there is a sea creature that is in a tank that they are studying. Or more aptly put, that Michael Shannon comes in and is torturing this sea creature. And Sally Hawkins and Octavia Spencer are two janitorial workers that work in this facility. And Sally Hawkins develops, as she's cleaning up, mopping the floors at night, it's this monster. It's like it's something out of, it looks like if you remember the old creature from the Black Lagoon,
racial.
But it has these really expressive eyes, these sad eyes.
Yes.
And she's mute, and she communicates through sign language, and somehow she's able to communicate to this merman creature, and they develop some sort of a relationship. And she decides that when Michael Shannon's character wants to kill this beast, she smuggles the cat, but he's a water creature. He's got to be in water. She devises this elaborate plan with Michael Stuhlbarg, who's her best friend and neighbor.
Richard Jenkins.
Who's his best friend and neighbor, to somehow smuggle this creature, the sea creature, out of the facility and put him in the bathtub of her apartment. Yeah. Now, I know this sounds very difficult, very nuts to explain, and it's as nuts as it sounds, but to me it's like...
It's Splash meets E.T.
It's E.T. I asked Guillermo del Toro if he was channeling E.T., because it's kind of like a porno grown-up version of E.T. in this thing. And he goes, no, there's some story, as Lisa said, it's based on some story about a fish man that granted somebody three wishes, Guillermo del Toro told me, and he took that as the foundation and built up on that. And I gotta tell you, it was shot for, he was also said it was shot for practically nothing, like $14 million or something like that, which is crazy that how little amount of money that is today to make a movie that looks like this. The production
and
design,
obviously has so many special effects in it.
The production design is incredible. The colors, the color palette on the film, there's a lot of green in this movie.
Yeah, that's
green
true.
Is a predominant theme that runs through this movie. There's a key lime pie sequence, which is like lime green.
Which is never really explained.
Right,
but.
Right. The color green, not only is the merman guy green, but they actually talk about green stuff. I don't know, I should have asked him about why, what's up with the green. But the color palette,
he would have explained it to you.
Is beautiful, and I like the movie. I mean, it's whacked out. It's crazy, but yes, it is derivative of E.T. in a way. But it's kind of like if you want to making a grown up version of that movie in some regards. I think it's okay. What do you think?
First of all, the E.T. reference doesn't really wash with me because its only thing it really has in common is that he's an otherworldly creature that connects with a human. Like, they have a romance. So if we want to get into the
and it's pretty brave.
It's
Sally Hawkins gives an amazing performance.
I think she's one of our best living actors. I really do.
Sally Hawkins. Great.
She's an extraordinary performer.
She does an extensive amount of
really
nudity, which I'm not bringing up for a period thing. But
no,
that
she
was
does.
A real
well,
tough
and what's
decision
interesting
as
is
an
this is actually the first year in her career. I was just reading an article about her where she's had two lead roles. She was in this and she was in Maddie. Interestingly, both films playing a disabled woman, like in some way, like a woman who's.
Maddie's a cool little gem.
Yeah,
I
remember you liked that a lot.
Well,
I think the film is beautiful, and I think it's one of. To me, this is the best film that Guillermo del Toro has done since Pan's Labyrinth. I love this film.
But it's
the
not
most accessible film that he's ever done in terms of a mainstream film.
Hellboy.
No, I mean, no. Definitely
really? No,
not.
No, no. But Hellboy is a particular. Genre of movie.
I think he always makes genre films. The people who love that movie won't love this one and vice versa. You know, I mean, this is a grown-up fairy tale to me.
Yeah, grown-up fairy tale. That's actually the best way to describe it. What did you think, Bill Bregoli?
Well, I actually got a sound from the actor who plays the sea creature.
Oh, cool.
And his name is?
Joe Logan.
And he's in a lot of stuff,
he's
right?
in a lot of stuff, but he's usually in a costume. And he explained how they transformed him into the sea creature.
So it was about maybe 3 hours from head to toe transformation. It's a bit of a suit, a bit of a makeup all together. You slip into some and zip up the back and then you glue some on and all that. So the gills were mechanical. But be sure that it was not motion capture. It was an actual creature suit that was practical and on film.
That's
you know, that's
Guillermo
interesting because I would
that.
Have assumed it was CGI at some points in the movie. And then when they get to her apartment and they're in the tub, I'm like, oh, that's really a guy. But now... Did they mix it up or so no. It was all, and that's one of the reasons it wasn't so expensive, maybe. Yeah.
Well, you'd never know. The actor's name is Joe
Logan.
Joe, right. He's I mean, you never recognize
Pan's Labyrinth,
the guy.
There was a creature.
I mean, buried under this.
Remember in Pan's Labyrinth, there was a creature who put his hands beside his head and the eyeballs were
eyes
were,
that's
yeah,
him, right?
yeah.
That's him, too.
Yeah. Wow.
He does a lot of this stuff.
Well, I think Pan's Labyrinth is a better movie. I'm sorry. I like this film. I don't love it.
Pan's Labyrinth
is an
extraordinary
film. I was drawn into it a little.
Film.
It has a really strange sequence where dance numbers inserted, and that's just short enough not to jump the shark here. But
in La La Land, in that particular scene.
Yeah.
I loved that. That was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
But Sally Hawkins is so good.
Ugh, she's
and
so good.
There are a couple of cool twists I didn't see coming involving
all
the Shannon character.
I mean, Richard Jenkins is really great and soulful and melancholy in this. He plays a closeted graphic artist who's her next-door neighbor who ends up getting enlisted to help. And this whole movie, you know, it's set in 1962, and I think it's no mistake that it's all about people who are othered in some way. Like, her best friend is a black woman, you know, her other best friend is a gay person.
There's a Me Too moment in there. There's a with the
oh, he says the creepiest thing that's been uttered on I think I could make
Michael
you
Shannon.
Shriek or I got
man Shannon can really play squawk. Nefarious bastards squawk. He's so good at it. He's so good.
You never told me what you thought of it, Bill Regold.
Oh, I liked it quite a bit. And I'm not usually one for fairy tales, but this one kind of moved me a little bit.
It
was fun to watch. And actually is an action kind of, let's get the creature out of the laboratory.
Yeah, well, that was kind of rote, you know, like from a lot of movies.
I agree with you.
Like that, again, I'm going back to E.T. We got to get the monster to the...
They do that in Splash, too.
It's always about getting the alien...
Out before the government
out dissects before
him.
The government. And I mean, how many movies have we seen? What was that one, the movie I hated with the kid? And it was also Michael Shannon was in this, and they're trying to get the...
Oh, you did hate that movie.
Oh yeah, the Secret or something.
Yeah, but they're all it's such a conventional
like
piece
movie.
Of movie making.
I'd like
where
to
it's
too.
Let's get we gotta before the government and before the police, you know, we gotta get the thing to...
Well, it's not like the
we've
government
seen the good in humanity and the creature where the government says it's evil, you know what I'm saying? So
that was that.
But I liked it. I think it was stylistically...
Sally Hawkins is amazing.
Sally Hawkins...
Man, this is a great year for female performances across the board.
I hope she wins the Oscar for this. That's the best female performance I've seen.
I don't know. I mean, I think that what happened in Lady Bird is really good. I mean, there's a lot of great performances.
And Meryl Streep is probably...
Well, she'll get nominated.
That'll be supporting actress. I think they'll put her for supporting. But Meryl Streep. But let's face it.
It isn't a year. She's not nominated for something.
First, they as sad as this is... Just the way I said with, the Academy, you know.
It's in the Oscar bylaws that she gets nominated.
Yeah, I mean, if there's something that has a disability or something like that. So the fact that she's...
If your name is Meryl Streep, you are nominated.
I think Sally Hawkins has a good shot. I mean, who's the front runner in that category?
She's near the top in that category.
I honestly haven't seen enough.
The other front runner is Frances McDormand for 3 billboards outside.
She's really good in that.
Missouri. But, you know, I think that... You know, it's I'm rooting for Sally. Although she's really good in that, Frances McDormand, I think Sally...
I would just love McDormand to win because she's an extremely... I mean, she's an amazing actor. And I love the fact that she plays no Hollywood games. Like, when she goes to award stuff with her gray hair, I'm like, thank you.
We talked about this a few weeks ago.
I love that.
Did you like 3 Billboards?
I think the performances are better than the film, I think, would be my... But I think it's a good movie.
I like the movie. Sally Hawkins... I watched after I saw the movie because I went back to watch a couple of scenes on YouTube of her from a movie that I love that Lisa can't stand called Blue Jasmine.
Yes, I truly hate that film.
But there's these... It's such a 180 when she shows up with Andrew Dice Clay to her hoity-toity sister, played by Cate Blanchett, and her husband Alec Baldwin, and they're like, oh, let's go to this restaurant. You know, and she's like, yeah, we just flew in. It's just, what a 180 from...
Well, you want to see a real 180 from this film. She was in Layer Cake. One of the first Daniel Craig films that got him the Bond series, actually.
Yeah.
And she's this crazy sidekick girlfriend of a mob
so
guy.
That.
Well,
how about Happy All the Time, the Mike Lee film that she stars in? That's one of my favorite movies from that year.
She was nominated that year.
Yeah, she was, because she deserved it. She's so good.
So we all recommend The Shape of Water.
Shape of Water.
Yeah. Okay.
Thumbs up.
Frances McDormand's
going to win. Allen, since I mentioned Blue Jasmine, it leads us to Wonder Wheel.
Blunder Wheel.
We're calling a streetcar named Wonder Wheel. Because, why don't you take the lead on this one, Bill?
Well,
Bill McCuddy.
Justin Timberlake is a... and if I've lost you right there, I should say...
Justin Timberlake
is not terrible.
I actually think he's a good actor.
No,
he's
good. He's been better in other movies than this. He's a lifeguard on Coney Island in the 50s.
1950.
He's involved with Kate Winslet, who is a wannabe actress who's kind of washed up now working as a waitress, married to
John Belushi's
son, Jim, his brother. And he's a mechanic and works on the merry-go-round at the on the boardwalk. Into their life pops a daughter he had from a previous marriage, played by Juno Temple. I'm going to say before I trash this film that there are a lot of really good performances in it. Juno Temple is one of them. She's being chased by the mob. They want her dead, and she needs to hide out. So that's basically the setup. And there's an affair, as I mentioned, between Winslet and Justin Timberlake. But then Timberlake, of course, falls for somebody else. And so that's when hilarity ensues. I will tell you, I didn't laugh once during this movie.
It's not supposed to be a comedy, Bill. It's not attempting to be a comedy.
Okay, now you explain to me. But I'm telling you, there are people saying
when
things
men
that
mansplain
feel like
to each
jokes.
Other.
And they're, I just think it feels like Belushi, who I've been hearing is getting touted for an Oscar, feels to me like he's playing to the back row.
Yeah, I think I see Jim Belushi acting. It's not a terrible performance. It's okay, but I don't think it's a great performance.
And Kate Winslet is really good.
I see him as he was like Ralph Cramden in that thing.
But there's absolutely nobody to like in this movie or root for, and that's my problem.
I rooted for the young son who was lighting everything on fire.
Oh, yes. They have a pyromaniac. Kate Winslet has a pyromaniac son. And that was actually kind of funny, although it doesn't sound funny in the description. They just keep cutting to him, just lighting different things.
I wish I'd laughed.
You didn't laugh at that?
No, I really.
What
I
you
was.
Think of it, Bill Bregoli. Lisa Ross.
You can almost see the sweat rolling down these actors' eyes as they try to do better than the script. I mean, Kate Winslet tries so hard. She proved to me that she could do the phone book because this script was so corny and just hard to. If I was acting in it, I'd have a hard time getting the words out of my mouth.
Okay. Well, did you say that to Woody Allen when you interviewed him?
I didn't interview him.
Okay,
I do have him talking about Coney Island and in the 1950s and what that was like.
I could see kids and their parents who lived there and who lived in amongst the rides, and they were poor people and they had a tough life, and it was not the delight for them that it was for the tourists.
What does Jim Belushi say?
I showed up, I walked in, I met him for 60 seconds. He gave me two pages, explained the character. I went outside, I looked at it, I came back in and I read. And then 3 hours later, I had the part. It was like very, very Woody.
I don't think this is the greatest Woody Allen movie on any level, and I don't think it's the worst Woody Allen movie on any level. I think it's okay. I think it's and I know people go like, oh, that's when I'm going to say it's a beautifully shot movie. But like The Shape of Water, the colors in this movie are incredible. The cinematography in this movie, the recreation of 1950s Coney Island and the
bright
boardwalk,
lights attracted you.
No, it's
shiny.
It's just beautiful. It's almost like these shots are composed almost like
well,
paintings.
It's Vittorio. What's his name?
Vittorio.
Yeah. He's always worked with good cinematographers.
And the set design by longtime Woody Allen collaborator Santa Loquesto is just really captures the period. But I was just totally knocked out by the colors and the cinematography of this film. It is gorgeous to look at. It's almost literally like going to a museum and looking at fine art and fine paintings. Now, the movie itself. Okay, so Woody Allen, you know, as Lisa and I have talked about over the years, yeah, maybe you shouldn't make a movie a year, you know? Maybe make a movie every few years and save it up. But he's gone to this well many times. I mean, it is the Kate Winslet character is very Blanche DuBois-esque, you know, sort of like in Streetcar Named Desire, which is like the Kate Blanchett character in Blue Jasmine. And he's gone to this topic of the woman who kind of loses it, and you know. But that said, I thought the performances. I thought Kate Winslet was quite good. I thought Justin Timberlake was okay. I thought that Juno Temple, very good performance. And I thought the story, look, I wasn't bored. The story was okay. It was predictable, but I'd give it a pass. I'd say if you like Woody Allen, it's not great. It's not terrible. It's okay.
I think pass. I think pass is the word.
The visual aspects of it are so overwhelmingly impressive that on that merit basis alone, combined with Kate Winslet's performance, that I'd say check it out. All right, Lisa, you didn't see the movie, but
I didn't say it because of a reason, which is that Woody Allen is the first director whose movies I've decided I'm not going to see anymore. I'm done.
How could you do that?
And here's why. I'm going to explain, so you don't have to ask why, because I was about to tell you why.
All right, tell me why.
I don't think that he... First of all, he, as you pointed out that we've discussed before, he makes a movie roughly every year, and I feel like I am watching his dissociation. His movies get worse pretty much like every time. It's like there's an algorithm in which they get sequentially worse each time over the years. And part of it is because the guy doesn't do any work on himself or any real living. He just keeps on going back. At this point, he's ripping off Tennessee Williams, who, by the way, is probably rolling over in his grave. The other thing that interests me about Woody Allen is that there was a point where appearing in his films would make your career, and now it's a bunch of actors who are saving him. Like, he gets the best thing about most of his movies is that he gets interesting people, from Joaquin Phoenix to Emma Stone, all these amazing actors to be in his incredibly trite films where people don't sound like real people. That's one issue. The other is that, to me, I don't understand how his movies are still getting made, and everyone else has been felled by the hashtag MeToo acts, and this guy, who is currently married to his former, essential, like, common-law stepdaughter,
is
rolling around.
Yeah, but that's already in the stock, as they say on Wall Street.
Yeah, but, I mean, it is. I do think that there is a groundswell against him, and the fact is that I am 100% open to separating the filmmaker from the film, but in his case, he makes pretty mediocre, tepid crap.
Yeah, I see. I think that it's hit or miss with him, and I think, and I don't agree.
I think his last hit,
Midnight in Paris, was a brilliant film.
Yeah, yikes.
And I liked Blue Jasmine a lot, and I liked that Joaquin Phoenix, who's the title of the film escapes me at the moment.
The Simple Man.
I literally prefer watching a Roman Polanski film to this
I really
love those. Are great.
Give me Weinstein.
And there are some horrible Woody Allen movies. The one that he did with Christina Ricci and Jason Biggs is a piece of shit. I mean,
you know what's a piece of shit? Blue
movie.
Jasmine.
No, Blue Jasmine's good.
No, Blue Jasmine's good.
It's really not. The Emperor is Naked, you guys.
I don't agree with you. What did you think of...
They're taking Louis C.K. out of
Bill Bergoglio.
The only thing I liked about Blue Jasmine was Cate Blanchett's performance.
What up, Bill Bergoglio? Boston in the house, baby.
All right, Bill Bergoglio, take on Wonder Wheel. Really?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And you heard me, Blunder Wheel.
Blunder Wheel. The cheese stands alone, Mr. Rosen.
So there you go. Yeah, that's a line I love that we've heard from Lisa.
Yep.
We get a lot of tweets on that line.
Yeah.
And we don't, you know, I've always wondered, is it the cheese? Somebody tweeted
the cheese.
Now, what does that mean?
I think it's some reference to, like, a book about our nursery rhyme.
But what's that book about, like, somebody stole my cheese or something?
Yes, it's the Wisconsin murders. I don't know. I'm just making it up.
All right. Well, I wanted you to explain that.
You stink, basically, is what they're saying.
I'm going to do some Googling. What else is up?
Okay, so a couple of things, and then we're going to go around, just things to point out. David Letterman received the Mark Twain Award, a prestigious comedy award that they give at the Kennedy Centers. It was broadcast on PBS. Al Franken was cut out of the PBS broadcast because of the sexual allegations, recent sexual allegations that have been brought forth against him. If you want to see the whole thing unedited, including the Al Franken performance, watch it the way I watched it, which is on YouTube, unless they've taken it down. I watched Mark Twain, David Letterman Prize, unedited, uncensored. So you can see the Al Franken. Not that the Al Franken segment is that captivating, but if you want to see it as it was presented to the audience when they tape this thing, that's the way I would watch it. The best part about it is the clips from the old NBC show. There's some funny, stupid pet tricks and the monkey cam and a couple of other things, which is when I think Letterman was at his best.
Meryl Marco was behind him then.
He's upcoming. Greg Mulaney. He had that show on Broadway with the two old people. They were buried under makeup. You know, John Mulaney.
John Mulaney.
Yeah, very funny, actually, in this.
And yeah, those
they
are...
have tributes from a lot of people. And I would recommend, if you're a David Letterman fan, and I like him, again, from the early stuff on NBC, not so much the CBS show, you might want to check that out. Lisa, what are you recommending this week?
I have been, I'm sure this won't surprise you guys, but I've been binging a show that I didn't watch and it was actually airing, which is The Good Wife. And, I mean, I cannot believe how relevant it is right now. Like, a bunch of women running law firms, you know, who are standing up to all kinds of sexism and strange, like, sexual dynamics and taking charge. It's a very satisfying film to watch after a day of reading to watch after an incredibly depressing day of headlines.
And has Margulies in it.
She's amazing. So is Christine
Baranski.
Yeah, she's so
good.
I think
they're doing a spinoff of that show with Christine Baranski's character.
The Good Fight. It's on CBS All Access.
What's it called?
The Good Fight.
Oh, so it's actually, they've done it. And
it's on.
I'm going to watch that. I had no idea.
Well, what's his name from the Aaron Sorkin,
Josh Charles
from Sports Night is in that too.
Yeah, he just got something bad just happened to him on the episode I watched, actually.
He's a good person to follow on Twitter. He's
really sharp. He's one of the few actors. He and Jeffrey Wright are two, and Zoe Kazan are the three actors I haven't had to unfollow because of stupidity.
I did stand up with him in Baltimore. You mentioned
Josh
I was from Baltimore
Charles
with Josh Charles when he was
really
17
cool
years old. He was just a kid.
That's right. He was born in 71.
So, Lisa, who's the axe going to fall on next in this? Today we've got.
Well, here's the thing.
We've got Matt Lauer. We're taping this on a Wednesday. We've got the news today was Matt Lauer, and then just moments before we started doing this recording today, we heard of Garrison Keillor.
The real trend here is the morning show massacres. We've got Ryan Seacrest. We've got Charlie Rose.
I didn't hear about Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah, he's got some problems.
To women or men?
Women.
ABC.
ABC. The question is: it Strahan or is it Stephanopoulos? Which of those two we'll get?
But here's the thing. Speaking as a woman who's spent her entire youth working in entertainment journalism. There's not one of these stories that surprises me. It's like no matter how you project yourself in the media, the truth is behind closed doors, most of these guys make creepy moves on you. And none of these stories are surprising to women who worked in the industry. There's something about a woman being in these environments that to guys is an invitation to be predatorial. Maybe because it's they see us as needing or wanting something or understanding that if we stir the pot, then we lose the little status or this whatever status we've achieved. But I have never, I have so many stories, and all of my girlfriends have stories. So anytime everyone's being surprised, I'm not surprised. I'm just excited to see what'll come next. Like, maybe we're walking into a moment where power and sexuality won't be so painfully intertwined the way they are right now.
Well, do women look too good? Is that the problem? That's what the actress yesterday said.
Yeah, you're talking about
Jessica, the one that played
Angela Lansbury. Man, I got to tell you how disappointed so many of us were. When she came out with that comment.
I don't know the comment.
Angela Lansbury, whom many of us have looked up to for years for Murder, She Wrote, and her delightful performances in screwball comedies from the 30s and 40s,
yes.
Basically said that women are also to blame for how we dress and present ourselves. And I was like, you know what, lady? Blow it up here.
That's kind of a fucking
Well, she
comment.
Said it a little
totally.
Bit. She said, we've looked good, and basically that's backfired.
It was a Michigas comment.
Yeah,
it was an old school, still trying to keep people happy. It was definitely up there with Woody Allen's "This is a witch hunt" comment. Please.
So, Lisa, since this is, we've worked together for so many years. And
you know I'm a feminist.
I know you're a feminist. I was just going to say that.
Really?
So where do you?
That hardly ever comes out.
Where do you? Yes.
I'm a smart woman, therefore I'm a feminist.
I mean, Lisa, you know, and I would ask you this even if you didn't claim to have some like clairvoyant abilities. Where do you think this is going to go? Like, what do you think? You don't have to be right.
No.
Game on this.
I mean, my friends and I have been talking about this a lot because one thing that always occurs to me, and if you guys have discussed this already, apologies for not catching it, but I feel that a lot of this comes from a displaced anger at the fact that the person who runs this country is known for sexually assaulting women, young women, raping women on record, in legal records. That is the person who is sitting in the White House right now. And I think that to some degree, what first initiated this was the profound anger that we couldn't displace him. So it started to get directed directed elsewhere, and it should have been. It's not like it's misplaced anger. It's just that we're systematically taking out all the other sex offenders. Where do I think this is going to lead? I am as curious about that as I am about whether or not Donald Trump will manage to stay in the White House for 4 years. I mean, what we're watching are sort of end stages capitalism all around us, and who knows what's going to happen.
Well, super feminist Billie Jean King last night at this Fox Searchlight thing told me she thinks this is just the tip of the iceberg.
It is.
She thinks men are going to come forward also and say, sort of like that Demi Moore movie, which we talked about also.
Disclosure or whatever, or something like that.
And I think that, I think she's right. I think that, I mean, when Matt Lauer, she said that it's just beginning now. She feels women are stronger. Millennial women, she thinks, are stronger, that her generation sort of put up with it, but that more and more women are feeling empowered now to come forward. Mm-hmm. And a Me Too, obviously, movement helps that a great deal. And she thinks some men will start to come forward.
Are any of these people coming back? Like, you know, like, for example, just the way Mel Gibson, for the anti-Semitic, ridiculous, horrifying remarks.
He was racist, anti-Semitic,
sexist. Now he's in Daddy's
sexist.
Home, too.
Or Woody
Mark
Allen.
Wahlberg and Will Ferrell. Right. So are any, like, Louis C.K., are any of these, Lisa and I went to a Louis C.K., a concert like a number of years ago together.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
do you regret that now?
Yes, I mean, you
yes,
know,
do you regret
you
having,
guys, you know
do you regret
that
having seen Louis?
You know,
C.K.?
I've known Louis forever. Like, he was a senior when I was a freshman in high school. Like, he went to Newton North, which is where I went.
And yeah,
I,
what's your thoughts on this?
I mean, it's so funny. I used to fight about him all the time with my ex-boyfriend, who also knows Louis from back in the day, because I always felt he was messed up about women. I always felt like there was a real have your cake and eat it to tone to his stuff. Like, he would head us off of the pass by acknowledging these qualities in himself so that we couldn't actually have the satisfaction of dealing with it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And do I think that these men will creep, and I do use the word creep, that's the right
creep
verb,
back.
Creep back into the mainstream? I think that there's so many questions right now. I definitely think that some of them will find their way back in. Weinstein clearly is done beyond measure, and I think a number of these guys are. It depends on the gap between their actions off. In some cases, like Charlie Rose, I think it depends on the gap between the actions that they are being accused of and the kind of presence that they projected. Like, Charlie Rose seems like an affable, thoughtful man who turns out to be a rampant sex offender. So that's not really something that you can reconcile easily in terms of your public image. Someone like Louis, I'm guessing, will find his way back in, although I doubt he's ever going to have a big female audience again.
What on before we go, Bill Bregoli and Bill McCuddy, pick of the week, Bill?
I'm still with Girlfriend Experience, which we talked about. I gave a plug a couple of weeks ago saying we'd only seen the first episode. I like what's happening in both of those stories. And Logan Lucky is now available on streaming.
I like that
movie. The Steven Soderbergh movie. I like that movie a lot. It's very funny and clever and didn't get what it deserved.
And you love Atomic Blonde.
The Hitman. Yeah, Atomic Blonde we talked about last week.
That's such an interesting
film. Tulip Fever is out. This is the thing that Weinstein bought that had for like 3 years and never got an audience, and I guess there's a good reason none of us have seen it. Oh, Bill, you saw it.
No, I didn't see it. Oh. I did.
I don't think it's much to write home about.
Yeah, I mean, Alicia is in it, but
Vikander,
there probably is the reason with all the heat around her that it got. And The Hitman's Bodyguard, which is a paycheck movie, What's in Your Wallet, Sam Jackson, a bunch of money from this movie.
It was number one movie for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it came out at a weird time when it did well. So that's there. I don't particularly recommend it.
What is this Al Pacino movie that's coming on demand this week called Hangman with Keith Urban and Al Pacino?
Yeah, that's been like a
heard of this movie, and with Brittany Snow. I mean, what is this movie? Like, was this straight to VOD?
Yeah, I don't think it's. I don't think anybody's really seen it. It's basically about a detective and a profiler going after a serial killer. Who's inspired by, I think it's a children's game.
Yes, you read very well.
So, what's up with Pacino? Why is he, his career seems like it's gone off the rails.
Well,
I
have friends on the set right now some extras, actually, some friends of mine of The Irishman, and they say he is an unbelievable Jimmy Hoffa.
I can't wait to see it.
Well, The Irishman is the one that I'm looking forward to.
I can't wait
to see
that.
Bill Bregoli, anything you want to recommend this week?
Pretty much going to say what Bill just said. I like Logan Lucky was kind of like a nice little.
Yeah, it's fun.
It has Channing Tatum in it.
He's great.
He's fine.
It's 7-Eleven meets Ocean's 11. I mean, it's like it's kind of a middle class kind of heist film that I think is really really well done.
I said Keith Urban. It says Carl Urban on here.
Yeah, Keith Carl Urban is
any relation?
Carl? No, he's an Australian actor.
Okay, well, I wanted to correct that.
Keith is Aussie, no?
Next week on the show, we're going to be talking about The Disaster Artist with James Franco. And
a lot of fun.
Unbelievable cast in this movie. Every 2 minutes, somebody else crops up in this movie. And we'll talk about that next week. And what is the other big film that's opening next
week? Tonya.
What's that? Tanya.
Spoiler alert, Tanya one of my Harding, favorite Nancy, movies of the year.
Tanya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan story where I hear I'm going to watch it before next week's show. I hear Allison Janney apparently knock
she's
out.
She's so awesome.
She's great. But Margot Robbie, who I saw last night at another party, and I told her how great I thought the film was, she said she enjoyed doing it, and now... she's in the Oscar mix, too, unless Meryl Streep takes a crowbar and hits her in the ankle.
So we'll talk I, Tonya and The Disaster Artist next week. So on the air, I'm going to put her on the spot. When are you coming back and doing the podcast again, Lisa? Because you know you're my favorite guest.
I'm sure
with
sooner
apologies
rather
to all
than
the
later,
guests.
Doctor.
I'm noncommittal.
I am. It's my thing.
All right.
Certainly so, before the Oscar season.
All right. What do we do here every week, Bill Vahetti?
We basically sit in my house and piss my wife off.
And we also...
We also see the bad movies, streamings, and anything else so you don't have
that's
to.
That's right. So for Lisa Rossman, my buddy... For being here, thank you.
So nice to see you, boys.
All right, and for Bill Bregoli.
I like the way she said boys.
And Bill McCuddy.
I'm still here, because I live here.
Neil Rosen. Hashtag. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.